insights and analysis continue. Here's Doug Wright on KSL News Radio.
Well, it's so good to have you along on the program today. Thanks so much for joining us. And obviously, the weather is a big issue today. We're going to be keeping a very close eye on that. John Gleason, my friend from the Utah Department of Transportation, will be giving us a little advice as we go over the river and through the woods for the Thanksgiving weekend. And I'm looking forward to this. We all, regardless of whether or not you've been watching the McCluskey situation at the University of Utah closely, there are obviously some things that we as a society need to become more aware of and be better prepared to deal with certain situations. And I was noticing that my state senator, Janie Iwamoto, is working on something regarding campus safety and working on a bill for the upcoming legislative session. And although the bill is a work in progress, we're going to talk with Janie just after the top of the hour about what is likely to be included in that bill and what a difference it may make. Jeanette Bott also will join us. She's the president and CEO of the Utah Food Bank. And at this time of year, we should be giving throughout the year. But there's something that triggers that milk of human kindness inside of us each and every time at this time of year. And what are the best ways to participate, the best things to give? Cash, of course, always speaks. But we'll talk with Jeanette about that and how we can, hopefully during this Thanksgiving season, reach out to those who are perhaps in different circumstances. Natalie Gochner, I openly admit that sometimes when something is baffling me, rather than just bloviate, I want to go to the source material, people that I have a lot of respect for on particular issues. Now, what exactly will be happening in the special session? We've talked about that here on this program. I've talked with it quite a bit on my Sunday morning TV show. We've had the various individuals. We've talked with Lyle Hilliard, whom I've known for years and out of the Cache Valley, but he and Francis Gibson have been working on tax reform, going out, meeting with committees, meeting with the public on that. We've talked with Speaker Wilson. We've talked with others. And honestly, there are some questions I don't pretend to have the answer to. And so we will be talking with Natalie Gochner. Natalie Gochner has such a legacy, going clear back to the Leavitt administration, then back in Washington, D.C., with then Secretary Leavitt in Health and Human Services, has come back to the state of Utah years ago, even before the governor came back, and has been working up at the University of Utah. She has such a good finger on the pulse of so many things. And as an associate dean in the David Eccles School of Business at the University of Utah and chief economist for the Salt Lake Chamber, I thought, I'm going to call Natalie and see if she will join us. And she will be joining us in the 1 o'clock hour to talk about the tax proposal. And remember, at this point, it's still a work in progress. Things are firming up. Special legislative session, we think, is around the corner on December 12th. Certainly, this will be a hot topic within the legislative session itself. How much work will actually be able to be done on December 12th in that session? So we'll get an update from Natalie, and especially when it comes to the most vulnerable in our society, how will they be affected? Because food tax is being discussed, sales taxes in general. We're talking about the income tax. We're talking about Social Security. What about having a tax break, state tax break on Social Security income, especially among the most vulnerable? And how will all this affect education? Yeah, a few little minor things to talk about with Natalie Gochner. That's coming up. And Boyd Matheson. I know he mentioned a little bit about this in his program. I'd like to get a little update from Boyd regarding his literal trip around the world. It's incredible the places that Boyd was, following, of course, leadership from the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints over into rather interesting areas. So we'll get an update from Boyd. And as I promised, we'll be keeping a close eye on the— I need a rearview mirror here, Robin. The new studio, which I absolutely love, I'm pointed inward now. I need a big rearview mirror here.
I've got a good view. I don't know if it's worth watching. If you don't like snow, it is coming down hard.
Can we just— it would attach right here to the computer screen, and it'd be just like, my 64 Chevy pickup truck.
Yeah. I don't know. If you like snow, you want to see it. If you don't, then keep facing this way.
Keep the blinders on and face this way. Okay. Now, before we do continue on, it is the infamous test to which I and others are subjected to before we can carry on until 3 o'clock this afternoon.
So, I suppose it's a rite of passage.
The gateway.
All right. You know me, Doug. I have one story I have been following very closely, so we're going to come right out the gate with an April trial date has been set for the guards charged in the Epstein suicide.
Yeah. I've been seeing the crawls on that on TV all morning, you know, the aftermath of the Epstein suicide, and you or whatever you might think it
might be.
I mean, put the you don't have the tinfoil hat on.
I don't. Here. I left it in the car, in the minivan today.
But look at the tentacles of this thing, and we are all asking, "Good grief!" There were rumors that it might go to the royal, you know, family of Great Britain. Well, indeed, it has, to the point where Prince Andrew has taken himself out of the game, and apparently the Queen was more than willing to do that. So, you know, who knows? Who knows?
It is such a ball of yarn is kind of what I think. Yeah. Every time you start unraveling more and more stuff. Yeah, the guards have a trial date set in April. They're charged with 5 counts of falsifying records, which they did. They were asleep. They were looking online for hours the night he died. This whole thing, I mean, there will be a movie. It's too bad Oliver Stone can't make this, but there will be a movie about this someday, and I will have the ticket for the opening midnight showing of this.
Maybe Scorsese.
There we go.
Will do
Scorsese would be great. Yeah, anyway, I am following this very closely, the whole thing. There's so many pieces of this pie, all holiday puns intended.
And how do things like that go on that long, especially when it has actually bubbled to the surface, you know, once,
clearly. He bought his way out of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it
I
is.
Know.
It is insane. So I'm watching that one pretty closely. That's kind of my deep dive. The second one, we were just talking about this. Ruth Bader Ginsburg is home and doing well after she was hospitalized.
Yeah.
She's 86 years old. She just kind of keeps getting up.
She does. And like I said, I think her greatest motivation for living and trying to remain viable and healthy is Donald J.
Right.
Trump.
Yeah, when he gets out of office, we're going to lose her. I'm going to
You know, really, you do wonder if for some reason he were to be impeached, which I don't think is likely. Well, impeachment is absolutely likely. Conviction is a different deal. I see a trajectory where he could serve a second term here. I'm just not seeing anybody, at least right now, strong enough to knock him off the perch, but you never know. So I think we might have Ruth Bader Ginsburg with us for another five and a half years.
I wonder what I'd have to look this up. This is what a producer should know. Who the oldest Supreme Court justice has been? Who's still
we've had him
sitting.
In their 90s, but yeah. I'm not sure either. I don't know
later.
That either. Yeah, I'm curious.
She is just going, and she's mentally very sharp. She's very there.
She's incredible. I love this while she's dealing with the fever and recuperating. Uh-huh. She's sitting there listening to recordings of the testimony,
right.
Oral history, and so on. It's crazy.
Yeah, she's not the retiring type.
No, she's not.
No.
In every sense of that
word.
No,
I don't even know if it was someone else, if she'd bow out. I don't see her. I don't see her doing that, going that way. Oh, you're looking this up.
Well, I'm just looking. Let's see, who was the oldest? The 10 oldest United States Supreme Court justices, and I didn't know Gabriel Duval. Mm-hmm. He was 82 and 1 month, and Louis Brandeis. Louis Brandeis, he was 82 and 3 months.
Oh, wow.
Thurgood Marshall was 83 and 3 months, so she's got them all beat
so
far. And, of course, we had William Brennan, and he 84 while sitting.
Mm-hmm. You know, these are all while they...
While sitting, 84 and 3 months. Ruth Bader Ginsburg is number 6 on list at 84 years and 11 months. So this obviously was put together several years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And Hugo Black, I remember Justice Black, 85 years and 7 months. We're getting up there now. Harry Blackmun was 85 and 9 months. Oh, this goes way back into the 1860s. Roger B. Taney was 87 and 7 months. Boy, he's an interesting-looking old guy.
He's got her beat.
John Paul Stevens, I knew we had one in the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
He was 90 years and 2 months. But, drum roll please,
mm-hmm.
The oldest was Oliver Wendell Holmes Jr. And he was 90 years and 10 months.
Wow.
So there you go.
Okay, the more you know. That's our factoid for today. 90 years and 10 months, the oldest Supreme
but
Court
that,
justice.
Yeah, but of course that wouldn't affect because he's not still alive. Right. Ruth Bader Ginsburg, it would. Her, she's probably up a couple of ranks since this.
Yeah. All right, really quick. Strong winds may ground Thanksgiving Day parade balloons in the Macy's Day Parade.
Yeah, that's a bummer, isn't it?
It's that or you don't want to see Snoopy flying away.
That's right. Wouldn't that be sad? Can't you just see the kiddies going,
well, you
Snoopy.
Can YouTube some of the balloon fails over the years, and there are some pretty sad, demented-looking,
wilting.
Yep.
You just have to say, kids, he's going off to fight the Red Baron. He'll be back as he floats over.
As he goes forever, Kay. I have one left. Are you a Black Friday shopper? Do you get out there at 4 a.m.?
No.
The biggest deal they're showing right now is a $150 Xbox bundle at Walmart. You're not going to be there at 3 a.m. in the morning.
No. You know, for years when I was doing the old show, we'd always have, the movie show would be on Friday, but we didn't start the movie show then until 10 o'clock. So the first hour of the show on Black Friday was always traditionally focused on what the heck are these crazy people doing out there? Some people, it's sport, though, and that's fine. If you enjoy it and you love it, or if you really need to take advantage, but, some people, I don't know.
But regardless, be nice.
Be
you
nice.
See these videos of people throwing punches and trampling
kids. Well, remember
kids
the year there were deaths at Walmart? You go, are you kidding me? I think it was one death. I don't want to exaggerate that, but oh my goodness, people getting trampled, fist fights in the aisle over what?
Yeah. Crazy. Be nice.
Yeah.
Okay, that's it.
That's
done.
It. Did I pass?
You passed.
I did.
You did.
Wow.
Carry on.
Okay. We will carry on. And next, we're going to talk about driving, not only today, but over the holiday season. Even if we had beautiful driving conditions over the Thanksgiving time period, we all need to be careful. People are in a little different mode, and there's a little different degree of desperation that we find on the roads at this time of year. So John Gleason will be joining us next with the Utah Department of Transportation traveling during the holidays and during the winter weather. We'll get an update on closures, too, coming up. Oh, the things that go on behind the scene here. I thought it was a pretty good line, didn't you? Yeah, Gustavo's. Some things you just cannot pass on from behind the scenes to the fore of the scene. I wanted to talk about the highways and byways of Utah. John Gleason is on the line. And, John, I'm suspecting that you're being on the line with me over the last little while because you're not bringing me donuts. Is that right?
I'll tell you what, Doug, donuts sound good on a day like today.
Well, no kidding.
By the fire.
And a little hot chocolate. Hey, let's talk about this weather. What's happening? I know earlier there were some issues in the canyons with some closures. How do we stand right now?
Well, those canyon areas are really getting hit hard, Doug, especially Sardine Canyon this morning. We had to close down because of multiple slide-offs, and Little Cottonwood Canyon has been closed down because there was an overturned semi and some other slide-offs up there. We've actually got the semi partially uprighted right now. They're going to take that out with one tow truck, and then there's another tow truck that's coming in to pick up the load that it was carrying, and so it's a little bit of a tricky situation up in the canyon areas. If you don't have to be up there today, it may be a good time not to actually venture up there just yet.
Other than the canyons, how are we doing down on the basic surface roads and on the freeways?
Well, so far so good. We've had a few dress rehearsals so far this year, Doug, with a few flurries here and there, but this is the real thing. This is what we've been preparing for the last several months, and our crews are out there. We've got several plows out there trying to address the situation and make the road safe. This is such a big travel weekend, and so many people trying to get out of town to celebrate with their loved ones and friends, and so we want to do everything that we can to make sure that they get there safely. And I guess the thing that we're asking from everyone is just to help us out and make sure that they're ready to drive in these type of conditions.
Well, it is interesting because the Thanksgiving holiday is kind of that kickoff of innumerable things that we're going to be doing over the next 5 or 6 weeks. And It as you mentioned, we've had a few little practice runs, but this is kind of the big show. This is the real deal. What are some of the tidbits of advice that you would give out, especially to our Utah drivers? And because we're far flung, a lot of people have relatives in Idaho and over in Wyoming and over in Nevada and so on. When you are driving these longer distances at this time of year, what are some of the do's and don'ts?
Well, I think first and foremost, you have to check your vehicle for everything to make sure that you're ready to go out there on the roads here, Doug. One of the things that many of us have probably taken for granted is that we have the proper tread on our tires. In the summer months and the fall months, you can get away with driving on bald tires to a certain extent. But in the winter months, this is where you're really going to suffer the consequences if you're driving on those bald tires. If you hit a slick spot, icy patches, the results can be catastrophic. And so that's, you want to make sure that your tires are ready to go. Make sure that your battery has sufficient charge and cranking power. Make sure that you test your lights, your headlights, taillights, brake lights, turn signals. And this is another thing that some of us take for granted or just don't think about when we're heading out on these long road trips, Doug, is you want to pack a winter emergency kit. Blankets, jumper cables, food and water, just in case the worst case scenario does happen and you do get stuck.
You know, one thing that caught my attention today, I was reading some articles and seeing some things from national news sources, and I like this one, and it said, fill up with the cheap gas we have right now. And it's relatively cheap right now, of course. But that makes so much sense. First of all, if you do get stuck off of the side of the road, you want to make sure you can still have a little heat. And you also want to make sure, even if you're not off the side of the road, but you're just in a big backup, you don't want to be running on fumes at that point.
No, you're absolutely right, Doug. And without the storm, take the winter storm away, we were already anticipating delays of up to a half hour on I-15, especially Wednesday and Sunday as people are getting out and coming back into town. But if you throw in a winter storm into the mix, that's basically a 1-2 punch with the holiday travel and winter weather. And so if you have any, just a couple of those slide-offs or minor fender benders, we could be looking at a real challenging situation on our roads, and we could have situations where people are out there stuck in traffic for a while. So you want to make sure that you have a full tank of gas before you hit the road, even if you're not anticipating that it's going to take you that long or that you have too far to drive. Just prepare for the worst, and I'm sure it won't get to that point, but you never know, and you always want to be prepared.
You know, if you have a 30-gallon tank or a 20-gallon tank, you know, that stuff is not light. Does the additional weight help you at this time of year too if the roads are snowy?
Yeah, but I think so many of us take for granted, or if we have four-wheel drive, we think we can drive a little bit faster if we're in big trucks.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, if you're out there and you're driving too fast in these conditions, If you're trying to brake, or if you don't give yourself enough space between you and the vehicles ahead of you, then that can be a terrible result as well. So, I mean, we all have to kind of look at it like we're all equals out there. We're all we're all going to do our part to make sure that we have the vehicles that are proper to drive out there. But just slow down, whether you're driving a big truck or a small car. You just want to make sure that you're taking all of the precautions to get you and your family home safely.
Well, the great equalizer is ice, isn't it? Oh, my goodness.
Yes,
you know, I remember a storm when I was a kid, and I was in my old Camaro, which had very sketchy traction anyway. And I was just sitting there on Highland Drive, and I was sliding sideways. There was a little – I've never seen anything like it. And, ice is a strange thing, so you're right. Hey, what about this final thing? As you look at the weather for the next couple of days leading right up to Thanksgiving, I know next to probably our meteorologists, you guys – well, you have your own bank of them as well. You're right on top of this. How does it look?
It's looking a little dicey, especially on Wednesday afternoon into evening when everybody's hitting the road, getting off of work, trying to get out of town. If there's one piece of advice I could give to people, if you have any flexibility with your travel plans, Tuesday looks like a little bit of a lull, and even Wednesday morning you should be okay. But if you can leave Tuesday, you're going to avoid some of the winter weather conditions. And if you have to be out there on Wednesday afternoon, just because you have airline tickets, just make sure to slow down and give yourself plenty of time. There's just no way you're going to be able to make up that time in these type of conditions and this type of traffic.
John, always a pleasure to have you on. You have a very, very happy Thanksgiving with you and yours.
Happy Thanksgiving, my friend. I appreciate it.
John Gleason, Utah Department of Transportation. Okay, we're at the top of the hour. Let's take a break, and when we come back, we're going to talk with my state senator. Just happens to be a convenience that she is working on a piece of legislation to help people be safer on our campuses. That's coming up. Stay with us.
More afternoon news and in-depth coverage with Doug Wright on KSL News Radio.
We're keeping a very, very close eye on the weather today. And just looking at the weather outside of our studios here at Broadcast House, it really is kind of just a little light winter wonderland situation. Little accumulation, more of a dusting. Nothing really on the road, but where the flower gardens normally are and where the grass is and on everybody's windshields and automobiles across the street on 3rd West in the parking lot, there is a little accumulation on those vehicles. We'd love to hear from you, by the way. Keep us up to speed on what this storm is doing, where it's going, and you can do that on our Utah Community Credit Union KSL text line at 57500. Just bring us up to speed, and especially if something's a little hairy out there, a little interesting out there, keep us up to speed. If you're coming down or through any of our canyons, let us know how you're doing. But here's the caveat. Be sure to do it safely. Don't try to text while you're driving. Please, please, if you can do so safely, let us know. And it's 57500. You've been hearing a lot of news today surrounding the lawsuit regarding the McCluskeys and Lauren McCluskey's sad, sad legacy, tragedy, tale. I mean, I don't even know what words to put with it. The number of times that she reached out for help, saying that there was a real problem over and over. And one of the big issues seems to be, as we've looked into this a little deeper, and this almost reminds me of 9/11, where the major intelligence agencies of our country were not communicating. It left gaps. It did not connect the dots. These folks over here had dots that were connecting. These folks over here had dots that were connecting. These folks over here at the FBI, they had dots that were connecting. But they couldn't tie them all together, which would have given a much, much better view of just what the threat was. That appears to be, a little bit at least, what is afoot regarding this. And then we've heard that Christine Durham, the former Chief Justice here in the state of Utah, has taken this lawsuit that is moving forward. But we're here to talk about what can we do. My state senator, as a matter of fact, when I found out that Senator Jenny Iwamoto was working on this, she is the Assistant Minority Whip in District 4. That's where she is a senator, and we have invited Jenny to join us today. She's working on legislation. Janie, thank you for taking our phone call. I know this legislation is in the works right now. I know we do not have a firm draft of any kind, but what are the goals? What are you working on here, and what should be accomplished with this legislation?
Well, last session, we passed Senate Bill 134, Campus Safety Amendments, and during that time, what we tried to do, working with the system of higher ed and the Utah system of technical colleges, we worked together to try to put something together on campus safety. And then, of course, Lauren McCluskey was murdered. And so a lot of that was considered in the bill and put towards that. But while we were doing it, I found some gaps already as we were moving ahead, but we wanted to go through with this legislation. And so since the passage of that, we have heard from part of the importance of that bill was you know, it covered sexual assault, domestic violence, dating violence, and stalking, and kind of all the broken, what is broken down into federal law. And we talked about campus safety plans, and some of that is covered by the Clery Act. I know the institutions may differ on how they report. Some may be better or not, and there were questions about that as well. But we had questions about, you know, should we have a campus police, you know, or should that be taken over by the outlying law enforcement so that things can move, you know, like in Lauren McCluskey's case, she was bounced back and forth when she didn't get answers. You know, she called the Salt Lake police, and the Salt Lake police told her that it was a campus issue. Mm-hmm. So one of the things we talked about and has been talked about with that is that we need seamless borders so that students don't have to know where to go. Because yeah. We know that when they are in times of crisis especially, you need to have clear procedures on how what to do. So I started working on this right after session, meeting with police, sheriff's office, domestic violence, and rape recovery center, and looking at this. And as I looked at it, it was very complicated because it's not all the same in every area of the state. And so it was getting very complicated knowing what was the best system to do. Like, for instance, SLIC, they don't have dorms on campus. They use highway patrol because they don't have a campus police. Mm-hmm. So what I've decided to do is I'm working with them again to see, really study this area, because we need to know what the best system is. And some of the things I found out since that time is, for instance, they are maybe on different record management systems, so they're not showing the records to their outlying police and the campus police, if that's, and or they may have, they're on different dispatch systems. So it's really crazy, because maybe the records might show something about the perpetrator, but the other system isn't, you know, and campus may not have the same system, and so they can't share those across each other.
You know, I hadn't even thought of that. We just kind of assume, and as I mentioned, you know, so much of this was the conversation right after the attacks on America in 9/11, that the FBI wasn't communicating with Homeland Security. Homeland Security wasn't passing along things to the CIA. There were so many other things where these guys had a part of the picture, those guys had a part of the picture, and these guys over here have part of the picture, but they weren't coordinating. So is it a matter of coordinating the record management and having access, or is it a question of having two very, very different and separate police departments? And if that is the case, it makes me even wonder, like the Granite School District, they have their own police force. UTA has their own police force. University yeah. of Utah has their own police force. I could see where right. if they're not sharing information, this could really be a problem.
Yeah, and not just sharing records, but they may be on a different dispatch. And so I know that the Salt Lake County, I'm trying to, you know, this came up when I was on the county council too, but I heard that they're moving to this Versa term, and some of the, you know, I don't want to just point to the University of Utah, because this is going to be a statewide issue. They're not on Versa term. And so you can't, the dispatch even, not knowing, that needs to be coordinated too. And so, and there's a lot of other questions that and I'm working with the universities right now. And I don't have legislation, but we should have something in the next week or so. But I want to share it with all the stakeholders, because sure. I want to make sure that victims are involved. I want to make sure students are involved. I want to make sure law enforcement, you know, just all the stakeholders are involved in this. And you know, there's a lot of other questions, too, of as far as what kind of evidence, you know, based protocol do they use in these situations. And I've just been learning about the lethality assessment protocol that's used for a lot of places, and are they on the same? Because we can do all this, these little checklists of things on campus safety, but if you do not, we talk about this all the time, if we don't change the culture in the police departments, you know, that, you know, the, like, it was said, like, sometimes, like, they're like cities of their own, and the number one thing in a city is public safety. And these students have reason to be worried, and I'm really impressed with the students these getting involved in this, you know, because it is, it's their, you know, they need to focus on their studies, but they're distracted with things like these, you know, some are high profile, but some of these
sure.
things happen and don't go report it either.
Absolutely. Senator,
one other thing.
Yes, but as this moves forward, I really hope, and I won't most likely, when you get this firmed up in legislation, Lee Lonsberry will be doing this show, but I'd like to chat about this on our Sunday morning TV show too. And so let's keep that on the burner ready to go. And you had one more point you wanted to make.
Well, I was just saying too, there's a lot of things like how they hire and fire within their police. And one thing that the campus police are in charge of doing, filling out the Clery report. And so one question that came up is if a victim who doesn't want to be identified or drops it because whatever reason, a lot of times it's because they're scared. Mm-hmm. A lot of times, you know, of retribution or whatever the reason is, they don't go through. Is that reported to on the Clery Act, you know, because it could be there's under-reporting, and that's become a big issue too. But it's, you know, this Lauren McCluskey's case, I've gotten to know them, very good people. And they, one thing I know when I went to Pullman to speak there for the kind of the anniversary and to celebrate her life and her legacy is that she loved the University of Utah.
Yeah.
And, you know, and so I just, she was, you know, it's just a situation, but she, through her life, I know that there's going to be a lot of change, and through her family, that there'll be a lot of change made.
This was particularly heartbreaking. And as we learned mm-hmm. more about it and how many times indeed Lauren did reach out and how many times, unfortunately, she didn't get the protection and the help that she needed. We look forward to chatting with you more on this. And Senator Iwamoto, as always, I appreciate you joining us today.
And thank you so much for taking the time and the interest on this matter, too. Thanks so much, Doug.
Janie, you have a great Thanksgiving, okay?
You too.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Happens to be my state senator, Janie Iwamoto, who is District 4 Assistant Minority Whip, and we'll keep a close eye on this, especially with all of the news that has circulated around this studio, this story, and then now also the lawsuits that are following. Okay, we're going to take a break, and when we come back, again, it's the time of year when many of us are looking for ways to give, and Jeanette Bott will be joining us, the president and CEO of the Utah Food Bank, and easy and perhaps even best ways to give at this time of year. We're keeping a close eye on the storm. We were talking a little earlier with John Gleason from the Utah Department of Transportation. We talked about a myriad of things, and the governor was apparently listening and heard us talk a little bit about the fuels and how important it is to keep a full tank of gasoline. And the governor will be joining us at 2 o'clock. He wanted to talk about the Tier 3 fuels and what a difference that's going to make with air quality here in the state of Utah. I look forward to that. So Governor Gary Herbert will be joining us at just after our news at 2 o'clock here at KSL. Jeanette Bott is on the line with us, and she is the president and CEO of the Utah Food Bank. And Jeanette, thank you so much for taking time for us here at KSL today. Let's talk about this.
Well, thank you for including me.
This giving time of year. You know, we all know we should be giving throughout the year, and the needs are acute again throughout the year. But there is something about this time, this season of giving and caring. What is the best way that Joe Average Utahn, Jane Average Utahn can do to help the food bank?
Well, there's three things that we require for us to be able to meet the needs of the folks across the state of Utah, and those are food, time, and money. We know that some people can't do all three of those. Some do, however. And so we ask people to choose, how is it you can help us with a donation? You know, be it food, a food drive, or a donation to us is so helpful, because whatever your family enjoys, another family does as well. If you can give us time, we always need volunteer help. People love to come during the holidays, but we need that volunteer help year-round. It's a 90-minute shift for most instances, and so people can kind of donate that kind of time. And then, of course, money comes to us, which in any operation, you need that for overhead. But for us, more importantly, we take every dollar that comes to us and we turn that into $7.34 of goods and services. So the cash really does help us not only to be able to reach the entire state, but allows us some flexibility. We can look at that inventory. We can see what product we might need. So it really does help from a different perspective than I think people perhaps realize.
Janet, I'm glad you mentioned that, and I've heard that more and more. Now, for some families, they want it to be very tangible so the kids can get involved. They go into their pantries, they go down to the store, they buy certain things, and then they bring it to the food bank. And I think there's a great learning lesson, object lesson there, and it does enormous good. But more and more, people who work in charitable enterprise, I know when there was the hurricane problems, tornado problems, St. Joe, Missouri, I remember calling down some friends of ours, the Crowders. Pastor Crowder was down there, and he said, you know, Doug, right now the money would make such a difference. We don't have to worry about transporting it. We can come here. We can buy things in this community itself that is already devastated, and we can make that dollar stretch and even scream. And just like you said, you can turn $1 into $7 in goods, services, and so on.
You know, and for that dollar that comes to us, 96 cents of that dollar goes right back into the program and only 4 cents into administrative costs. So we really are utilizing your dollar the very best that we possibly can. And I think that people need to recognize we try to make it easy. You can go online at utahfoodbank.org. You can click online and make your donation there. You can donate to a virtual food drive that we have up. Select the products you want us to buy. We'll use your money. We restrict your money for that item, but use our buying power. So we're really trying to make it as easy as we possibly can for folks to partner with Utah Food Bank.
Are there particular foods that you would like to see for those who are, they do want to do something family-wise or community-wise? They want to make it very tangible, very visible, maybe as, again, a learning lesson?
And the first rule of thumb is whatever your family will enjoy, another one will as well. But regardless of nutritional value or not, macaroni and cheese is the number one item that people seem to ask for.
Really?
Any kind of a box meal that kids can fix themselves. We have a lot of kids who are home while parents are working, and they need to have the opportunity to have a meal or put together a meal with things that are easy for kids to cook. So kid-friendly, you know, box meals. We love to have vegetables and fruits. We ask for things that are low in sugar or low in sodium. Canned meats are incredible. Any kind of a tuna or chicken, anything that has that protein value. And then we also ask that, you know, if you think of something that would come to you that your family might need that you don't think of, perhaps it's a box of detergent or perhaps it's a bag of diapers. Those things are always needed as well.
Well, I hadn't thought of that. You know, a box of diapers. When Dee and I were married, first married, and we're having our kids. Man, you know, when somebody gave us a box of diapers, that was like a gift from on high. We really appreciated that.
And it still is for young families. So there are a lot of things that I think we don't think of, but almost every item that you would find in your home, believe it or not, makes its way to the Utah Food Bank. And we distribute those products back out to 188 pantries across the state.
Oh, that is great. Now, how can people, if they want to drop off things, walk us through that again. If they want to give money, how do we do it? If we want to drop things by, how do we do it?
So the warehouse that we utilize here in Salt Lake City is at 3150 South, 900 West. It's very clearly marked on the east side of the door. You can drive up to an overhead door. We'll come out and help you. We'll weigh the product, give you a receipt. You can go online to utahfoodbank.org and make your monetary donations. And now during the holiday season, almost every grocery store will have a bin or a barrel set up. Harmon's throughout the course of the holiday season is a great partner of ours, and they're one of our holiday food fund sponsors, so their barrels are available for people to use. And then if you want to volunteer time, if you just go to that webpage, utahfoodbank.org, look at the icons across the top, food, time, or money, you can sign up to volunteer.
Janet, thank you for joining us today, and best of luck with the season, and have a very happy Thanksgiving.
Thank you. You as well.
Janet Bott with us. president and CEO of the Utah Food Bank. Let's take a break, and when we come back, Natalie Gochner will be our guest. We're going to talk about tax reform here in the state of Utah. She had an interesting op-ed piece. We'll talk about that and more coming up.
The afternoon insights and analysis continue. Here's Doug Wright on KSL News Radio.
Just a quick note, I want to remind everybody, Tim Hughes will be Saturday at Stockton 12 Honda. This is at 10860 South in the Auto Mall, and he'll be there 10 to 12 at Stockton Honda, I think is what they're trying to say here, in Sandy. And come and see KBB's best overall brand for 2019, and drop by and see the Honda that you're looking for. That's with Tim Hughes on Saturday. Okay, there have been many conversations, let me just put it that way, regarding what might be changing in Utah's tax structure. You might recall during the last legislative session, this popped up and honestly caught a few people off guard. There was a little confusion. Nothing firm came up, but the promise was that we would look at it again, perhaps in a special session. That seems likely to occur on December 12th. And what exactly will be happening? There have been committee meetings around. There have been those. I talked with Lyle Hilliard, as I mentioned, a senator up in the Cache Valley area, and also Francis Gibson. And he was on the television show several weeks ago, and we talked about their meetings. And both of them indicated how productive it was, especially the hour before the actual committee meeting, when they just were talking with average folks here in the state of Utah about their concerns. And as we were digesting some of the proposals, some of the things that might be in the works that appear to be in what the legislature will be discussing in the special session coming up here in a couple of weeks, first thing I thought of, we need to turn to somebody who has really, really looked into this and see if we could get her perspective. Natalie Gochner is on the line with us right now, and of course, Associate Dean in the David Eccles School of Business at the University of Utah, Chief Economist for the Salt Lake City Chamber of the Salt Lake Chamber of Commerce. And Natalie, thank you for taking our call today.
My pleasure, Doug. Happy snowy Monday.
Boy, no kidding. No kidding. We're keeping everybody up to date on the roads today. There have been a lot of op-eds. There have been lots of press releases. This one from the Utah PTA that we got today, and it talked about in its current form the tax structuring revision bill, and then they go through some of the ins and outs, quote, is a threat to the long-term funding of education in Utah. Utah PTA opposes the current version of the tax restructuring revision bill. The Utah Constitution guarantees all income tax be used to fund a K-12 public education system and higher education. And then this is the line that got me, especially after I'd read your op-ed piece. Cutting the funding source for education while proposing an increased tax on food and gas places an untenable burden on Utah's most vulnerable populations, including families with children who are already going hungry without adequate means to purchase foods. What intrigued me in your op-ed piece, Natalie, was talking about this very group or these very groups, the most vulnerable among us. Could you give us your impressions, especially when it comes to the most vulnerable among us? What will, at least as is proposed right now, the restructuring do to or for these folks?
Well, I'm happy to address that. You know, it's such a comprehensive tax restructuring modernization that they've put forward that I was trying to think, where could I add some insights? And there's a part of the restructuring that really addresses low-income Utahns, and it does it in a very policy-specific way. So it provides a food tax credit, which is very generous. It provides an earned income tax credit for the intergenerational poverty population, and it provides a tax credit for Social Security income, so for those with fixed incomes. And as I sort of looked at the numbers and talked to some of the people behind this, it was clear to me that the food tax, the sales tax on food, is about a $30 million benefit to Utah's low income. But what's in this bill is about a $65 million benefit to low income. And the reason they're able to do that is that they target the low income rather than giving a tax cut to everybody, which is what you do with a lower rate on food tax.
Do I understand this correctly, that right now the collections on food tax it would be approximately $250 million? Is that's what's off the table? And am I also correct in for example, I'll mention the sales tax on food to somebody, and they're not even aware of it. And this benefits everybody from the very, very richest among us to the upper middle class, to the middle class, lower middle class, everybody, including the visitors to our state. That intrigued me. I hadn't really thought about that. But the visitors to our state are not paying any tax on this food as well, when such a relatively small of the $250 million that basically comes off the table, that benefit going to the poorest among us.
That's right. You know, in public policy, they'll use the term blunt policy tools and then surgical, you know, policy tools. And by charging a lower sales tax on food, that is a very, very blunt tool, because just look at people in our state during these prosperous times. There's many, many households who can pay for sales tax on food, but we give them that tax break with the policy objective of helping low-income Utahns. And it creates a double effect that I think is particularly challenging. First of all, it's $220 million that you didn't mean to give. That your policy objective was to help low-income, but you did a $220 million tax cut to others. But secondly, it creates a lot more instability in the tax system. And so in the tough economic times, when, you know, the economy is not strong and sales tax are not as steady, you've created this instability because the food tax is so stable. But by taking so much of it off, you lost that stability. And I think that's just another way that it, unfortunately, in an unintended way, can hurt low-income Utahns, because they're the recipient of a lot of assistance that now we don't have.
How will the benefit for, under the proposed tax restructuring, how will that benefit for the lower income and the more vulnerable among us? How will it actually work? I know a lot of people get a little shy. You know, we have circuit breakers on property taxes and stuff like that, but a lot of people just, you know, they kind of hate to feel like they're going begging to the government for a break.
Yeah, I think it's challenging. I mean, this to receive this benefit, there's very clearly you have to ensure that low-income Utahns file their tax returns, because it's through an income tax that they receive these benefits. And again, the benefits are generous, but they must fill out a form. And so I think it's incumbent upon decision makers, if this passes and goes through, to provide funding for public outreach and tax preparation. I made it a point in the op-ed that I wrote to remind readers that low-income Utahns are eligible for, you know, health care assistance through Medicaid and food assistance through the SNAP program, Women, Infants, and Children Nutrition Program, the Housing Choice Voucher Program. You mentioned the circuit breaker property tax. We have all these ways that we try to create a safety net that cares for people. And so this is just another one, but it happens to be more than twice the benefit if we can get them to fill out their returns.
Yeah, that you point that out in the op-ed piece, and I hadn't even thought about the difficulties of that either, because our income tax is a way that we do so many things, including even at the end, if you so choose, some charitable donations. And goodness, if somebody is not up to speed on that, does not recognize the benefit of going ahead and doing that and helping them with filing their tax return, that can be a big challenge, as you point out in the article. Natalie, could you stay with us one more segment and we can expand this a little bit more? I like something, and you put this in the final paragraph of your op-ed piece, where you say, "I'm fond of the saying, the time to fix the roof is while the sun is still shining." I like the fact that we're dealing with this while our economy is booming. We are not at a critical mass of problem at this point and trying to anticipate. That's the way things should happen. But boy, I'll tell you, there's some weeping and wailing and gnashing of teeth out there, especially when it comes to education funding. And maybe we could at least give a cursory view of that coming up in a moment.
Happy to do that.
All right. Natalie Gochner, Will stay with us for another segment, and the Associate Dean in the Eccles, David Eccles School of Business at the University of Utah, Chief Economist for the Salt Lake Chamber, will continue that conversation coming up. We're all hearing the rumblings about the restructuring of Utah's tax system, and it's not just some little tweak. This is a big, big deal. And so I called Natalie Gochner, who, of course, is an associate dean at the David Eccles School of Business at the University of Utah, chief economist for the Salt Lake Chamber. And I appreciate Natalie staying with us a little longer to even go out of the area of the most vulnerable and how the tax restructuring will affect those folks and move into perhaps even some other areas. One thing that has people freaking out, or at least some people freaking out, Natalie, is the idea that we would lower the state income tax rate, and that would, this is one of the ways that legislators are assuring everybody, look, there will be an overall, even with all the things that we're doing, there will be an overall reduction for the vast majority of Utahns. But when the income tax completely, all of it, every single penny. I remember when George Will actually questioned me on that once. I was doing an interview with him, and he said, no, that's not possible. All of your state income tax goes to public education? And I said, yes. And if we lower the state income tax rate, does that not lower the money that goes into education?
And that's the question you're asking me?
Yes.
It's complicated. You know, the way that I think it's helpful for listeners to think about that is that our Constitution allows for both public and higher education to be paid for with income taxes. But you can also shift money that used to be used in the general fund over there because of the constitutional change. And so there's some shifting that's occurred between funds, but they're now to the point where they can't shift anymore. And so our income tax is growing at a high, high rate, and our sales tax is taking on water. And as our sales tax is struggling, it really puts us, you know, maybe just a few years away from a real budget crisis. And so what legislators are doing is they're saying, let's look out several years and try and create a more stable, a more predictable, a more flexible tax system that's modernized. And as we do that, we'll actually be able to spend more on all the state needs that we have. And so, yeah, they want to reduce the income, the individual and corporate income tax rate from 4.95% to 4.64%. Coupled with the other things they're doing, it'll be an $80 million tax reduction if this all passes. And they will have put in reforms that have users pay more for driving because they, you know, charge more for the motor fuel tax. There'll be more money for low income, and there's, you know, overall a process where the base gets broader and the rates fall and you have a more stable tax system.
What about education, Natalie? Because the ongoing, and you and I have had this conversation, there have been polls after poll, in talking with former State Senator Pat Jones and others, it seems that Utahns, when you put it to them that if we give you a tax increase, in this case we're talking about a decrease, but if we give you, if there were to be a tax increase, what would you be willing to be taxed for? And I've seen innumerable polls saying the one thing that I would be willing to be taxed more for is education, if I am convinced that it goes to the classroom, goes to the kids, goes to the teachers. And last time around, we had a very complicated proposition that tied it into fuel and everything else, which, you know, people just, honestly, they not only didn't understand it, they didn't buy it, and they did not vote for that proposal. But the bottom line is, Utahns say, hey, we're willing to be taxed more for education. How does this gel?
Yeah. Well, I think it's complicated, and I think that the question that is asked of us, and let's say that's asked of the education community and on behalf of Utah children, is if we can get a more stable tax system that grows with the economy, is that better for school children, or is it better to just stay where we're at and you know, continue to kind of, you know, use duct tape and different things to try and balance our budget because we have this mammoth constitutional earmark that we have to try and work around. So just give you an example, you know, the earmark becomes almost a falsity because it they can always spend less on education anytime they want just by lowering the rate. You see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And they also have enough things that they can justify that they've used general fund for, whether it's, you know, school lunch and different things, that they can kind of move money between funds, and they've been doing that for some time, especially with higher ed funding. And so I think the real important thing is that legislators and teachers have a common interest in a very predictable and flexible tax system. And I would just encourage the state's education community to stay at the table. Stay at the table because there's clear evidence that our sales tax needs help. And I think a real easy way to explain that, Doug, is just think of our aging population. Okay, we know we're getting older. Baby boomers are aging. As they age, they spend more and more money on health care. Money they used to spend that was taxed is now no longer, you know, subject to sales tax because we don't tax health care. And that's just one of several structural trends that are coming down on a sales tax. The sales tax is a Depression-era tax that hasn't been modernized. Mm-hmm. So I think it's so important for the education community, rather than making any sort of quick judgment, but to stay at the table and work with legislators to put us in a situation where we have a common interest, and that is to modernize this tax system.
Natalie, we're almost out of time, and I'm throwing a hot potato in your lap right here at the very, very end, but if the question to you right now sounded like this, will education get more or public education get more or less money under what is proposed, what would you say?
I think it would be important for the education community in a variety of ways to get some commitments from legislators, if you know, because I believe the goodwill is there. And what they need to know is that student growth will be funded. They need to know that our funding per pupil will rise with the cost of living. And I think they should want more flexibility at the local level for property taxes. Those are the things that are being discussed. And if they can get that kind of commitment, then I think that education will do extremely well. If they don't get those commitments, then I think it's a different story. And so this is why I'm saying stay at the table, work on this, because our entire state has an interest in modernizing our tax system, and the time to do it is when the sun is shining.
Natalie, I always appreciate our conversations, and obviously we could talk about this for hours. We'll look for other opportunities with you and others to talk about this. One, I mentioned one hot potato. I'm going to drop one more in your lap. Is there is there movement afoot right now to actually go in and change the Utah Constitution so we don't have to kind of do the fancy dancing and kind of almost a little bit of a shell game moving money around? So 100% of our state sales tax, our income tax rather, would not go to education?
Oh, yeah, and I'm not part of those discussions. I don't know a lot about it. I'm not in the back rooms as they're being talked. But, yeah, my understanding is that both legislators and the education community are looking for a commitment that could take care of the education needs while we solve this tax problem. So I think it's a good time for everyone to take a deep breath. I think it's a really good time for people to commit to stay at the table and build from common interests, because there's a lot of really I would call it deft policymaking, or clever, or seasoned policymaking that's gone behind this tax proposal. And I think it's very daring to do, but I think it can be very good for the state if done right.
Natalie, thank you for joining us here at KSL. Next time we'll tackle something tough, okay?
Okay.
All right. Natalie Gochner with us here at KSL News Radio, Associate Dean in the David Eccles School of Business at the University of Utah and Chief Economist for the Salt Lake Chamber. I'm looking forward to talking with the governor coming up in just a couple of minutes. Governor Gary Herbert will join us. We're going to talk about fuel, Tier 3 fuel, and what a difference that could make in the state of Utah, especially with air quality. That's coming up.
More afternoon news and in-depth coverage with Doug Wright on KSL News Radio.
This was unexpected, but I'm so pleased that the governor of the great state of Utah would join us on the program today to talk about Tier 3 fuels and other things. Governor, welcome.
Well, thank you, Doug. Happy Thanksgiving to you and the listeners out there. A great week for a variety of reasons. The number one thing I'm thankful for today is this introduction of Tier 3 fuels finally here in Utah. We've been working on it for a number of years, and we're grateful that Marathon Oil has changed their refining process, that they're now producing Tier 3 fuels. It'll be in their Speedway convenience store and gas operations around the state, but 26 will be all set up by January 1st of this year. That's good news for us for having better air quality along the Wasatch Front particularly.
Governor, talk to us about Tier 3 fuels. Over the years, you've chatted with this about this on the air with me and others, and also have brought it up in our editorial board meetings. But what will the Tier 3 fuels do for Utah?
Well, what it does, it has a lot less sulfur content, so it burns cleaner. That's the name, number one thing. There's about an 80% reduction in emissions with Tier 3 gasoline. If they're burned now with Tier 3 automobiles, which are 2017 automobiles and newer. And so that's like taking 4 out of every 5 cars off the road now if we start burning, you know, Tier 3 fuels in Tier 3 automobiles. Even with those older cars, it still has about up to a 15% reduction in pollution. So as most people know, most of the pollution that we receive in during these days of inversion come from tailpipes. About half of all the air pollution out there on these gunky days is coming from our tailpipes. So this is an opportunity for us with really no pain. The cost at the pump is the same for us no matter what you're buying. So find a station that's selling Tier 3 gasoline and make the air quality. It makes your catalytic converter work as it's designed to be to function and consequently produces a lot cleaner exhaust than what we're having with our typical gasoline today. So it's going to be a much cleaner environment out there with Tier 3 fuels, and as we have more and more Tier 3 automobiles coming off and we acquire them, our air quality is going to get cleaned up by about 80%.
Wow. That is amazing to think of the impact that simply having a Tier 3 vehicle burning Tier 3 fuel would make. And then, as you mentioned, a 15% better deal even in an older vehicle. Governor, are all of our refineries, all of those who are, you know, refining fuel in Utah on board?
We met with them here just a few years ago. We've been working on this for about 3 years. And everybody is sympathetic to the cause. They don't have to do it, but they've all have said we're going to step up and see what we can do. Today we announced for the first time Marathon Oil and their retail operations called Speedway are, in fact, having it in the pump. I filled up today with they already have some lower sulfur gas out there, but it's not won't be the Tier 3, which is down below 10 parts of sulfur per million. We're up over 30 parts per million for typical gasoline out there. So you can see the significant reduction in sulfur, which helps us to burn cleaner. But other refineries are now saying we want to do it too. I think the fact that Marathon has stepped out front here, it's going to give them an advantage in marketing. Tier 3 fuels available here. Come and help clean up the air quality. Do your civic part and your responsibility. It's easy to do. No additional cost, really no inconvenience. Other refineries are going to follow, I'm sure, close behind. So we're hoping to have additional announcements over the next few months here in 2020 and have other refineries bring on board Tier 3 fuels now. So I'm just excited. This has been a long time coming. We've been working hard, and these are refineries, and again, credit Marathon. Feels like a marathon that we've been doing this, by the way.
Right.
Aptly named. But credit them for being the leader, the first ones to get it out on the marketplace, which is going to help us all with our air quality and the unique quality challenge that we face, rather, here in Utah with inversions.
It's interesting you'd mention Speedway, because in our neck of the woods between my mother's home and my home, I'm always passing a service station that was being refitted, retooled. It's kind of a red and white type logo, and then they put up the name the other day, and it was Speedway. So we have this right in one of my traffic patterns. Do you have any idea, Governor, how many locations they either have or will have?
I know right now they have 26. 26 operations here in the Salt Lake metropolitan area. More on their way. They also are going to wholesale their gasoline, Tier 3 gasoline, to other outlets that have not yet been identified. But there will be other outlets out there that I've talked with them just this morning about, letting them also advertise whatever it could be, you know, Doug Wright's, retail gasoline outlet. And you can say, Tier 3 fuels available here.
This is really good.
I think it's going to be a marketing tool. It's going to be, people are going to want to buy Tier 3 gasoline.
I'll tell you what, you know, over the years, and I think everybody, I've noticed it even with my kids, we are so much more sensitive. And you look at how air quality has gone from maybe a lower tier, pardon the pun there, a lower tier issue in the state of Utah. But now, depending on which list you're looking at, it's either number one or it's in the short list of three. As a matter of fact, your former lieutenant governor wrote an article, an op-ed piece in the paper a while ago, Greg Bell, and he said, here are some challenges that the next governor of the state of Utah will have. And he said, this is basically all of the things we have to deal with are because of the really good things that have been happening here in the state of Utah. They're just products of growth and advancement and everything else. But number one on Greg's list was air quality.
Yeah. Well, it continues to be a challenge because we are growing so rapidly. And so we're a fast-growing state. If we're not one, we're two or three in the nation. People like the quality of life we have here. They like economic opportunity. All the things that make Utah, Utah, a vast majority of people out there say, I'd like to be a part of that. So we have growth in unprecedented numbers. So the question is, how do we accommodate the growth and have no loss of quality of life? And air quality is at the top of the list. And the good news is we've addressed it head on. We are reducing our pollution in a significant way. Over the last 10 years, we've reduced pollution along the Wasatch Front over 35%. That's
wow.
A significant reduction. And that's in the face of, by the way, of having about 300,000 more people that call the Wasatch Front home now.
Mm-hmm.
So more people polluting less. We probably, in comparison to other metropolitan areas of our size, produce less pollution per capita than other states. Our uniqueness is this inversion, where we have this valley and the mountains surrounding us. We're going to have an inversion now. We've had snow today, and maybe over the next day or two, then it'll clear up, and then we'll have the inversion occur. And even though we pollute less, if you put a lid on top of it, over time it accumulates, and you have a gunky day. We've gone from 18 gunky days on average when I came into office to today we're having only about 8 or 9. But even, you know, that's 8 or 9 too many. So this is going to be another step in the right direction to help us stay on top of providing good air quality for all of us to breathe. It's not a partisan issue. It's just let's develop policy to make sure that we are good stewards of the earth and protect the air quality we all breathe. And certainly water and other situations are a part of our environmental stewardship responsibility. So we're on the right road. We're certainly going in the right direction. We may not be to the promised land yet, but I can see it now for the first time. When you can reduce the pollution here 80%, as we get this incorporated into our gasoline purchasing, and now over this next year, we're going to be a long ways towards cleaner air.
Governor, you already addressed something that I was going to ask, but I want to underscore it. You mentioned that this Tier 3 fuel does not carry an additional cost. I think that's really important for people to know. You're not going to be paying more in order to save the environment and go for air quality.
Right. Marathon Oil, again, part of their overall production, it's just absorbed into their costs. And so they understand that they're investing probably over $100 million, by the way, to make this to happen. So hats off to Marathon Oil for being the first to do this and saying, we're going to put our money where our mouth is. We want to be a part of the solution, not a part of the problem. And others, Chevron and others, are going to follow in suit doing the same thing. And the good news is it's going to be available. The challenge for us as the consumer is let's make sure we choose wisely now. And it's not just buying Tier 3 gasoline, which is easy to do. It's going to become easier and easier over time. But it's also, you know, making sure we're cognizant of those red air days that we maybe need to take mass transit rather than drive our automobile, trip chaining, you know, ride sharing, all those things that go into contributing to reduction of pollution here along the Wasatch Front and throughout the state. That's kind of our individual responsibility. as our own contribution. It's not just screwing down the corporations out there, which we're doing and doing more so now than ever before. It's about all of us participating in the effort to pollute less in order to have cleaner air to breathe.
Governor, I really appreciate you listening today and calling in today, talking about this most important issue. And I wish you and your great family a very happy Thanksgiving. Thank you for being here.
Well, thank you. It's a happy Thanksgiving for me. Finally, we've seen what we've worked on for the last 3 years coming to pass today. Good news for all of us. Yeah. Happy Thanksgiving to one and all.
Hey, thank you so much. The governor of the great state of Utah, and it's Marathon Oil, who's producing the Tier 3 now, and it is available in their Speedway localities, 26 of them out there. And the good news, too, that the governor said is that Marathon is able to and willing to wholesale to others. And so other outlets of service stations can carry the fuel and advertise the fact that they have it, Tier 3 fuel. All right, let's take a brief break with a big thanks to the governor for joining us today. And when we come back, we're going to talk about some of the world travel that our Boyd Matheson has had with the hierarchy of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. We'll get his take on the international trip. So good to have you along on the program today, and Boyd Matheson is joining us. I hijacked him. He had an opportunity to join with all of you earlier today at 11. But Boyd, I was really curious. You and I were talking about this off the air. What a pivotal thing Vietnam was, the Asian, it was all the domino theory, right, and everything. And boy, you and President Nelson and other representatives from the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints were over there with media such as yourself, and it's almost hard to imagine the change that has happened. And in Vietnam, I have to ask this question, then we'll talk about some other more ethereal things perhaps, but do they dwell on the Vietnam War the way we do?
No, it's they've really moved forward. It was such a cultural moment, I think, for so many here in the United States. There were so many things wrapped in it, a real cultural war as well as, right, the war itself. But in Vietnam, it's really not that way. They of course, call it the American War. But it's something that is deep in the rearview mirror. The other interesting thing about Vietnam is it's such a young country. So even, yeah, those who would have been around during that time, most of them are very old and aging out, so to speak. And so it's very much a forward-moving country. And that's really the feel that you have there. Yeah. It's this burgeoning place. You've got a lot of growth happening there in Hanoi, a great deal of growth happening in Ho Chi Minh City. And so it's a very vibrant place. Obviously, lots of challenges that they're dealing with, but a very forward-moving place.
So interesting. When I interviewed Robert McNamara, he had just written his book, Fog of War.
Yeah.
You know, had just come out. Many people were watching that documentary. And I'll never forget when Robert McNamara said, even now, when we went back, and you know, this obviously has been years ago now, but when we went back and sat down and we were having discussions with the leadership, and a lot of them were still there, he said the tensions were still high across the conference table. And they said, how could you be so stupid? How could you not have seen that the Chinese, we are so different, that this and this, and on our side? And former Secretary McNamara said there were times when people actually kind of started to, it was so energetic that they started to stand up and, you know, kind of pound on the table. And I look at where we are now, where this is the destination point. This is where you go for a beautiful exotic vacation. Yeah. And now we have this tour that you were on, I hope that's the proper word, with the leadership of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Yeah. My, how things change.
Yeah, and are changing at a really rapid place, not only in Vietnam, but in Cambodia and Singapore and Indonesia, other stops along the way. But the interesting thing to me, you know, we've had this vision and so much coverage around President Nelson and, you know, down at Cardinal Stadium in Arizona speaking to 75,000 and up at Safeco Field up in Seattle to 54,000. He literally traveled across the planet to speak just a handful, a couple hundred people in a hotel ballroom in Vietnam. Right. And so it was very much this idea. We always talk about, you know, what can I do? Listeners are always saying, well, you know, what can I do? What difference can I make?
Right.
And it's all about just this individual. And I think it's a real hallmark of President Nelson's time as prophet and leader of the church is that he's very much about the one. How do we get to that one person, even if we have to fly all the way across the world in 14 time zones to get there? It's worth it if you can make a difference for one. And I know you're going to be talking about some of the other activities going on in and around the city in terms of giving this time of year. But everybody can help one person. Everybody can do that.
It's interesting. Did anything in particular, other than, you know, the reaching out to the one, and, you know, rather than speaking to a packed stadium or a huge, huge, you know, venue, that meeting with just the folks in measuring in hundreds instead of tens of thousands, anything else stand out to you?
You know, all of the meetings with government officials in each of those countries were really significant because the leaders of these countries recognize that if you have strong individuals and strong families and strong neighborhoods and strong communities, you have a really strong country.
Yeah.
And they were all so appreciative of the different work that the church has done in each of those regions. So that was very interesting. We also had a chance to sit down with Elder D. Todd Christofferson, the Quorum of the Twelve, who was traveling with President Nelson. And we talked about how these economies and these countries are growing so fast, relying very heavily on technology. And if that's sort of undermining, all of these countries have a real spiritual tone to them, you know, rich history and philosophy, and just that worry of they're losing some of that in the quest for science and technology and moral relativism and, you know, how easy we kind of start sliding down that slope of, you know, what is truth.
I think I told you this, Keith. I narrated a book for Keith Garner.
Yes.
Boyd. And I remember at the time he was the mission president out of Hong Kong.
Mm-hmm.
And basically half the world's population was in that particular mission.
Right.
And he recalled at that time Elder Hinckley, at that time Elder Marion G. Romney, Marion D. Hanks, pardon me,
yes,
going on in. I also met Elder Romney once too a long time ago. But he talked about what a different world it was, how when they went to Vietnam, they were flying in on helicopters, they were landing, they were meeting with some GIs and things like that. My, what a difference we have in the world.
Interesting you bring up President Hinckley, because President Nelson actually spoke of President Hinckley and some of the groups they had there that literally met in a household together. And he said, you know, you can really feel the spirit of President Hinckley here in this meeting tonight. He said that in Hanoi and Ho Chi Minh City in particular, and just said, you know, who would have imagined, you know, this kind of growth, this kind of opportunity, and the difference that it's making in real people's lives and in communities and in the country. I go back to that. These leaders with these foreign leaders, these presidents of countries, prime ministers, heads of religious affairs and so on, they are all taking note of how the church goes in, what kind of work they do, the humanitarian work, the reach on that is just so extraordinary. Great piece in the Deseret News by Tad Walsh today on the work after the tsunami in Jakarta and Indonesia. And again, a lot of great work going on, but it still boils back to what do we do today?
Our family lost a friend in that tsunami. It was,
oh, is that right?
My kids, they knew a family, and they lost. Oh, my goodness. I think back on that. Boy, this has been interesting. How can people, you mentioned, you know, Tad's article. Will there be upcoming articles?
There's a continuing coverage there on Deseret.com. People can go check that out. Tad's story on Cambodia was out, and then he'll also have one on the, hard to believe, we're coming up on an anniversary of the tsunami.
I know.
The time just rolls by, and a lot of great work being done there. And then there's a piece on truth and kind of our conversation with Elder Christofferson is up there as well as President Nelson, a piece on the bridges that he's building. We always talk about easy to drive a wedge in today's world, but only a real leader can build a bridge. And he's doing a lot of that around the world.
Boyd, thank you for sharing this experience with us. And there will be opportunities to learn more, of course, on the pages. In the pages of the Deseret News. Let's go ahead and take a brief break. And we were talking about something, and I am embarrassed that I was not more up to speed on the opportunity to give in the giving machines that are, as a matter of fact, Boyd tutored me a little earlier today. Bonnie Gordon Young, Women's General President, will be joining us. Stay with us.
Afternoon insights and analysis continue. Here's Doug Wright on KSL News Radio.
I wanted to remind everybody that you can take KSL with you wherever you go. Listen live and on demand. You can download the KSL News Radio app, which is powered by Any Hour Services. I've really been looking forward to this conversation, and I am embarrassed to it. I don't know. Yeah, you know, how sometimes you'll just go, how in the world did I miss this? And I heard some of my colleagues and friends, talking about the giving machines, and I found out that my friend Carol Makita, whom I've known for years and years, was working on this, and Sam Penrod and others. And I went, and I was, you kind of hate to do this, but at some point you have to fess up. And I went, can you tell me a little more? I actually sidled up to Boyd earlier and said, can you tell me a little bit more about the giving machines? And I go, where have I been on the planet for the last several years? So we fortunately have been able to go right to the top. We have Bonnie Gordon, Gordon on the line with us, who is the Young Women's General President. And thank you so much for taking time to join us here at KSL today.
Well, thank you. It's wonderful to be with you.
I am embarrassed that I am not more up to speed. But I thought, I am going to go to the person who can really tell us what the giving machines are and what they're all about.
Well, it is a wonderful, the giving machines are really a wonderful opportunity to help us transform the Christmas season into a season of service. Of course, the giving machines are part of the Light the World initiative that helps us really, it's an invitation to follow the Savior and be an example of caring for individuals one by one. So imagine as a giving machine going, how we do, we go to buy a candy bar or soda or something in a vending machine for ourselves, but the giving machine is an opportunity to go to a vending machine and buy products or service through our local charities or global charities for someone else during the Christmas season.
And I understand this can get fairly creative. I have been to charitable dinners and so on before where they'll, at the end, give you the opportunity to pay for a well being dug or whatever it might be. I understand that if I wanted to at the giving machine, I could buy a goat.
Well, this year they've got sheep. I was looking at them this morning. It was exciting. They've got chickens. They have cataract surgery. They've got polio vaccine. So the fun thing about the giving machines, if you've got local charity partners and you also have global charity partners. Mm-hmm. One of those that have been with us, obviously, for the 3 years is our Latter-day Saints charities. And then we have local and global charity partners that also have been with us for the 3 years that these giving machines have been available.
So when you walk up to, and I probably ought to ask Sister Corden where we could find giving machines. I understand Temple Square and elsewhere, but where do we find them? And then I'd like to find out how it actually works.
Okay, so this year we've expanded. There's 10 locations, and you can go online to lighttheworld.org and get the actual exact location of every single giving machine. But there are places like New York City, Hawaii, London, Manila, San Jose, California, Las Vegas, Gilbert, Arizona. There's actually two places here in Utah. And each one of those would have unique local charity partners. And then our global partners would be the same throughout all of the giving machines.
I love this concept. And again, I am embarrassed that somehow I missed the boat on this. And it's been around now. This is, its third year? And
You need to go.
Yeah.
Doug, you'll need to go and experience it, because it really is an experience that fills your heart with excitement.
Where are the locations in Utah?
The one is in the Joseph Smith Memorial Building in Salt Lake.
Okay.
And the one in Orem, let me see if I, I do not know. So you're going to have to, this is where, let's see if I can pull this up quick. University Place.
Oh, University Place. You think of, for our two local ones, and then as you mentioned, they're literally all over the world, but at the Joseph Smith Memorial Building, think of how many of us will be there for some holiday activity. Think of University Place in Orem, how many people will be in there for innumerable reasons, and what a great opportunity to give.
It is a wonderful opportunity, and it's amazing to see the youth and the children that just line up. A sea of children and youth. Every year when I go down or walk past the the giving machines, I notice that they're there. They have stories. I ran into a young woman today, and she was the very first young woman, I think, this in the Joseph Smith Memorial Building to participate. And she bought art supplies for someone because she's an artist. Wow. And so that spoke to her to share that great love that she has.
You know, we all love to give, and everybody loves to give in different ways. And sometimes with your children and so on, you're trying to make a point, so you want it to be very tangible. Other times, there's nothing that speaks like cash. But I love this, that you can be very specific and target a gift in such an incredible way. And I understand that this is kind of like any other kiosk or ordering something with your credit card. You can do it on debit card, credit card?
Yep, you do it on a credit card. You just like you would do for any vending machine, it'll have a number on there, show you a it'll have a donation card that you'll see, and whether it's cataract surgery or a sheep or a chicken that you choose, and punch in your number and decide if you want to add however many you want to add to your cart. Once you've got all the donations that you would like to give, you swipe your card, and then each one of those donations drop on a symbolic card into a glass display bin at the bottom of the machine, and all the funds, 100% of the funds, go directly to the charities for the purchase of these items.
That is amazing. This is very, very cool, and I'm assuming it's like other charitable donations. It's all tax deductible too, which is just a nice little perk.
Yeah, and all of the receipts can either be you can have a receipt text to you, or it can be done through an email.
Well, here's my promise to you, Sister Corden. I'm going to be over there buying a couple of chickens and perusing and buying some fun stuff. And a sheep might be nice as well.
Well, do it and bring some youth and children with you. I promise it will. It'll add an extra dose of Christmas cheer.
Now, I don't know if you have this at your fingertips, but what's the sticker price of a sheep nowadays? Any idea?
Oh, I don't. I do not know what the price of the sheep was. Let's see, what did I order today? I did 100 mils, and that was $25. And I did contacts for teens. I think that was around $60. But there's simple things that are $10, and I don't know. But when you find out, let me know.
I know. I'm very curious to see what my donation of a sheep is going to be.
Can you imagine how you'll bless somebody in the far reaches that they now have a sheep that they can use for an income?
Yeah.
It will be a blessing.
What a great, great thing, and to make it so real, so tangible. And again, when you take your kids or your grandkids or your class or whatever it might be along with you, it makes it so, so real. Sister Corden, yes. Thank you so much for joining
You're
us
back.
Today.
And have an enjoyable and a very, very Merry Christmas season.
Boy, you too. Thank you so much.
And have a great Thanksgiving, too.
Absolutely. No yams on my plate.
All right.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Sister Bonnie Corden with us, who is the Young Women General President, talking to us about the giving machines. And really, I know there. I'll get some snarky text out there. Doug, we knew you were clueless. How was I clueless on this? This is so cool. And I was totally, good grief. Maybe I'm spending too much time in my basement in Eureka or something. I'm not quite sure. Let's take a break, and we will come right back with just a wrap-up on the show and a little bit more, all here at KSL News Radio. By the way, we love to get your texts. Text us on the Utah Community Credit Union KSL text line at 57500. We're in the waning moments of the program today, and first of all, I've just got to thank the people that came through for us today. You know, some days, especially on a Monday, you start the slate and you go, and especially a holiday week. And boy, to have my state senator, Janie Iwamoto, joining us to talk about some of the legislation she's working on right now, about keeping our campuses safer, especially in light of what we are discussing regarding that tragic death up there. And then John Gleason from UDOT was kind enough to join us. We talked with the president and CEO of the Utah Food Bank, Janet Bott, about how we can give in that regard. Natalie Gochner joined us too, and I want to talk a little bit more in our waning moments here about keeping a very close eye. This is going to be most interesting. This is a major overhaul. This isn't just a little tweak here and there. This is a major overhaul of the taxing structure in the state of Utah. Natalie did her best in light of the fact that we haven't gone through the special session. She had a particular focus on how will the most vulnerable in our communities here in the state of Utah be affected by this. And overall, she, based on what she's seeing at this point, she thinks the vulnerable folks in our society will fare okay and maybe even quite well through this. But what about the rest of us? We'll keep a very close eye on that. And then Governor Gary Herbert, he was just listening to the show and heard us talk about keeping a full tank of gas and so on when you're out traveling on Utah's highways and byways during this Thanksgiving and holiday season. And he said, hey, we have good news today because Tier 3 fuel is available. This is a good day, and it's coming from the Marathon Oil Refinery, and their retail face is Speedway. And apparently there are 26 Speedway locations now where you can buy the Tier 3 fuel, which in a Tier 3 vehicle makes all the difference. What was he saying? That Tier 3 fuel in a Tier 3 vehicle will be the equivalent eventually of like taking four cars off the road regarding the pollution factor. So it's a big, big deal. And as I understand it, Marathon is also going to offer their Tier 3 fuels to others who would like to buy it at a wholesale basis and then advertise the fact that they carry the Tier 3 fuels. And our other refineries, according to the governor, when he chatted with us a little earlier, they hopefully will soon be on board with that as well. And then, again, I keep wondering, where in the world have I been? But Sister Bonnie Corden, Young Women's General President, called in, and we talked about the idea that you can give a gift at this time of year or any time of year in a very specific fashion to a specific group in a specific area and a very specific need, like a chicken or a sheep or cataract surgery, all kinds of things in the giving machine. And we have two locations out of the 10 that are right here in our backyard. She mentioned New York and London and Manila and Las Vegas, and she mentioned the other 8. But in our area, it's the Joseph Smith Memorial Building in downtown Salt Lake City, and you just go up to put your card in and make your donation. And there's also one in University Place in Orem. And somebody was asking, did we get the information on that? Did we get the information on the receipt, or did you get a picture of what? Okay, you get a receipt, but she also said something dropped down, and it was specific. Anyway, somebody was texting and said, desiring to give something to my grandchildren for Christmas, indicating something donated, and I'm curious if the giving machines offer a card indicating what was purchased, and apparently that is the case. You get the receipt, and is there a picture of what was given on the receipt? Okay, the picture drops into the bin, but you don't actually get it. But you could certainly maybe do a screenshot of that. There are all kinds of ways in our modern technology where we can do that. So, I was just talking through that with our producer, Amy. But it's an interesting thing. Imagine taking the kids downtown or to University Place and just going, okay, kids, should we buy a chicken? Should we buy somebody? Sister Corden mentioned several things that she had already purchased. But what a great way to give. All right, that does it for the program today. Thank you so much for being part of the show. Wanted to remind you that at any time, of course, you can send us a text message. And, of course, the Utah Community Credit Union KSL text line at 57500. We'll see you back here tomorrow afternoon at 12:30. We have Jeff Kaplan coming up next. Keep a close eye on the weather. They're going to do that right off the top of Kaplan's show.